Get more points. Come on. Come on, boys. That's it. Watch the fiber. Soften it up. Sports.
This is Sports Sunday.
Jokic has it. Clock ticks. Gonna put one up. Jokic for the win. It's good. Jokic got it off in time.
With Rashawn Taylor and Joe Fisher.
First and goal. Mahomes flings it.
It's there. Hartman. Jackpot. Kansas City.
On the Odyssey app.
Hate me or love me. You watched. That's all you could do.
And 1080. The Fan.
Good morning. Welcome into Football Sunday right here on 1080 The Fan, the Odyssey app, 99.5 HD2, YouTube and Twitch for the kids. I am Joe Fisher. Across the faux marble table is Rashawn Taylor.
Yay, yay.
Across the glass is Jordan Schultz. The gang, the band is back together for the first time since week one of the NFL season, I believe.
That long?
I was out last week. You guys held down the fort last week. I was, as Rashad affectionately likes to say, having a white boy weekend down in Arizona.
Amazing. And, just carefree.
And then week before, I believe week two, we start football Sunday. And then literally week two, we have to take that week off.
Yeah, no show. Which was...
Thanks to your Patriots.
My Patriots. I mean, yeah, it was their fault. But actually, I appreciate my Patriots because I got a chance to go to the beach that weekend. And I haven't been anywhere, you know.
I think it's the coast.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, we have an Oregon coast.
I don't know if we can say, I went to the beach this weekend, bro.
Yeah, we only
shredded some gnars.
Yeah, I think that's the black people thing. We only say, yeah, we're going to the beach here in Oregon. But it's definitely a coast.
Whether it's Alaska or Southern California, it's the beach to
black
people.
I will say it was absolutely beautiful. So it was something like a beach because on the beach, you know, during the day, and it was relatively warm. Right? It wasn't super, super cold out there. You know, Oregon coast, Oregon beaches can be incredibly
frigid,
freezing in September, but it was a beautiful, beautiful Sunday. Sorry, Saturday and Sunday. So got a chance to chill at the coast for a couple of days when we didn't have a show. So it was all good.
If it was early September enough this year, I think you got lucky because late August, we got warm water. Like, we were actually able to swim up in the ocean up at Cannon Beach and Seaside. So
yeah,
kind of felt like it was like a really good year to get to the Oregon coast.
I only get in so far in the
like
the
knees up, knees only.
Ankles, you know, because yeah, listen, I have a profound respect for the ocean. Like, it's one of those things. Like,
it's one of the most powerful forces on this planet.
I just can't mess with it. Like, it's one of those things. It can,
all saw what happened to that Titan submarine. All right,
yeah, like if they can do that to that submarine. My black ass would be swept away so fast, you know, by that water. So I remember like in elementary school when, you know, it'd be like towards the end of the year and get a chance to go to a field trip. And they took us to, I think it was Lincoln City. I can't really remember. I think it was Lincoln City though. But they told us that if you went in the ocean, you got to stand sideways just to make sure, you know, you don't get swept up and everything like that. I don't know.
Those sneaker waves, they'll get you.
Yeah, I don't know. My teacher, shout out to Miss McGinty, but she told us to.
I know she's listening right now.
I know she's listening. You know, she's definitely.
And
definitely
she's still
not,
a miss, I'm sure.
Definitely not. But, y'all, she's definitely still a miss. But it's ever since then, that's how when I get in the water, just make sure I stand sideways. I'm not trying to get swept away. It could be totally fake. I'm pretty sure it is. However, I'm not taking any chances at this point. I've been doing it for about, let's say, 30 years or so. I don't think now is a good time to start switching stuff up.
And here you are, still standing.
I'm still here. You know,
still standing.
Live to still tell the story.
Well, I will say I'm glad glad that we're here. Glad that we're all back together again. Definitely would be a little bit happier if I was talking to you all at 9:04 a.m.
God, no kidding.
I mean, hey,
especially
man.
After an 8 a.m. kickoff or 8 p.m. kickoff for the Oregon Ducks.
That's I may or may not have watched the fourth quarter in bed.
I watched the fourth quarter at my dinner table because it was a bright idea. It was a great idea. It worked out very well. I finished with my son's soccer game yesterday. I'm like, all right, let's go to the store. And I was telling Rashad this before the show, is that I have a cast iron Dutch oven that I just need to utilize more. And Joey, my son, he's like, let's go to a Mexican restaurant. I'm like, I'm not going somewhere to buy food. I'm making food tonight. And he wanted Mexican food. I'm like, all right, let's go get a pork
butt. We got Mexican food at home. We got McDonald's at home.
Yeah.
Thank you, Joe. I thought that was only a black people thing.
Oh, no. That was definitely happening last night. I've been eating out and just eating like crap lately. So I'm like, I am making something for sure.
Good for you. Smart. I like that you put your foot down on that. Yeah. You know, my parents always did try to recreate the Egg McMuffin at home. Never tasted the same.
Well, it tastes the same, but it's still very on point.
You got to somehow make
it. Yeah, that's true.
You got to somehow make that circular egg disc that they have.
Oh, you just got to get an Amazon attachment now. They make.
Oh, I've seen those.
Yeah,
that or a mason jar lid. The ring of a mason jar lid. You use that and just spray it with some Pam. That's another way. So that way the egg doesn't stick to the metal ring.
Dude, thank you for the hot cooking tip.
There's a little cooking DIY for
you. I actually kind of prefer the home egg sandwich as opposed to the McMuffin.
I think it depends on what kind of mood I'm in.
I gotta be honest, man. Like
the home egg sandwich.
I'm a big over easy egg guy.
Yeah.
You know, so you know, a couple pieces of bacon or a piece of sausage, over easy egg. You know,
get the yolk running down your fingers down to your elbows.
Absolutely, man. That's the best way. If it, you know, what's the old Carl's Jr. slogan? If it doesn't get all over the place, doesn't belong in
your
place.
I thought it was FU.
Yeah, my ex girlfriend said that too.
Oh, but
jeez.
Wait, what? But yeah, last night I was like, you know what? I'm making some damn carnitas.
Very good.
I'm making some effing carnitas.
Oh, I saw your tweet. Picture looks good, bro.
Yeah, and so I threw that. I bought a big old pork butt, halved it. So now I got like 3-4 pounds of more pork butt to use. And also, I know it can be also called pork shoulder, but it's much more fun to just call it a pork butt.
I mean, pork shoulder, it's so professional.
I know. No, pork butt.
Oh, I got to eat that, right?
Yeah, I got it. Dude, I got to go in on the butt. Yeah. All right. Mark that. But then I threw it in the Dutch oven, got myself all the seasonings, the spices, the chicken broth, the bay leaves, did it all. I went in, got everything I needed. And that went in the oven about 7:30. And that thing's, it's got a, as I figured out before the show, the word I was looking for, needs to braise for quite a bit. It needs to be cooking in those juices. And it didn't get done till about 10:30.
Yeah.
When we were in the second half of the game. 7:30 is when it got in the oven.
Yeah.
So
a late decision there.
Yeah, no, it was definitely like Joey was just dying for food at one point. And my girlfriend was at my house last night, too. And I just kept profusely apologizing to them throughout the night. I'm like, I'm sorry, guys. I don't know what I was thinking with this. I was like, it will be great. This is going to be very delicious, but eating at 10:30 at night, it's a good thing that that is the only positive about the Ducks playing that late last night, is that I had carnitas tacos to eat while watching the end of that game.
I saw very few positives to an 8 o'clock kick. Like, that's just rude.
Unless it's Hawaii playing, that makes sense.
It's just rude. Like, that your entire Saturday night, if you did
the audacity.
Seriously, because if you're thinking about it, like, As a male or as a football fan, you know, from 9 a.m. until 6 p.m., 7 o'clock on Saturdays, like, it's going to be college football all day, right? So if you do have a wife, a girlfriend, or something like that, man, you got from 7 to...
Or anybody that you ever want to have sex with again.
you got about 7 to about 11 o'clock to where you guys can... Do the couple thing. Go to dinner or all those little things.
They get you for the day, right?
Here comes punk-ass Oregon Ducks hunting to play at 8 o'clock at night on a Saturday. Like, come on. What the hell, man? Like, so, of course, my wife is looking at me like, so this is the plan for the night, eh? And I'm like, I mean,
sorry, babe.
Kinda. But then when it was like, by the time it was 28 to 10 second half or for first half, I'm like, all right, I think we can get active and go do something.
Man,
we didn't do anything.
I definitely spoke something into existence at one point that I didn't mean to. It was the commentator curse that I threw on the game last night. It was 28-3, and the Ducks are at like what, the 5-6 yard line.
Oh no!
And I was just like, oh, let's go. I was like, I'm like 35-3 at halftime. I was like, everybody that wanted to go to bed,
before at halftime. This is exactly what they want. This is perfect. Yeah. And then pick six, 28-10. I'm like, ah, damn it.
Now we got to actually watch and see what happens because, you know, that's that old line, you know, anything can happen, you know, with this Oregon old line, you know, here. And what do you know? They held on to it.
So. Yeah, that was the only touchdown for UCLA was that pick six.
Hey, good for them.
So, yeah, let's make sure to never do an 8 p.m. kickoff ever again. It's not going to happen. We'll probably get one next year as well. But
I got to be honest. So far, this schedule is weird.
It's a very
not loving it.
It's a very weird like month. So we have the game last night, and then Oregon's got to turn around because then they got a Friday night game coming up against Michigan State.
Yeah, theoretically, with the hours, like that is a really short window.
I was saying, saying to the lady last night, I was like, now they're going to get home. I was like, they're going to fly home, probably get home tonight at like 3 a.m. And then tomorrow is an off day. They'll watch film on this game. They'll start watching Michigan State film. And then they got Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday to get ready and prepare. And then Friday's game time.
Yeah, thank God they're at home, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So don't have to travel. And then the week after, we all know what the week after is.
Oh, yeah. What's the week after?
Big game. Damn it. It's the Ohio State game. Come on!
I know. I actually tried to get tickets for that game.
Oh.
That was stupid.
What, did you $500 a pop?
Yeah, did you send the Ryan Cooley text?
I don't know
if you'll get the. I think you'll get
texts
the.
It's like, you know, I don't want to be laughed out of the, you know, out of the building. So I'm like, I'm gonna save that one.
You'll get the red at 10:38 a.m. and no response after that.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. So,
And then the week after that is the Friday night Purdue game in Purdue. So, you know, the Ohio State game, that's going to be one of the only normal kickoff times that we have for the Oregon Ducks in the next basically 3 weeks.
Yeah, but they got to figure this thing out.
But if you're thinking, I mean, I agree that the weird late Saturday night kicks suck. But if you're talking about like time with the lady on Saturdays and a nice little bonus Saturday or two that your wives get with you or girlfriends get with you during the season, hey, Ducks are playing two Friday games. So it helps you out.
I mean, because I don't know about you guys, but Fridays are, you know, pretty lit too. And yeah, now the Ducks play on Friday night, so it looks like, sorry babe, Friday we're in the house tonight.
But then you get Saturday, that all day Saturday,
and that's all day football on Saturday, which they already know the drill for that. Like, that's going to be a lot of me on the couch watching college football and or playing college football. And so there you go. Right.
I am extremely excited for next weekend for my own selfish personal reasons, because it seems like there's been something going on the last 2-3 weeks on either Saturday or Sunday where I can't just watch football all day. Last weekend, I was in Arizona. I golfed on Saturday in the middle of the USC-Michigan game, so like trying to keep track of that and also try not to lose my mind on the golf course. I'm down bad in my golf game. I'm going to have to go back and see my boy Andy at X Golf here soon because
go to the doctor?
Yes, it's rough. I need a checkup.
You'd be very proud of your boy, man, because the week that you were gone.
I heard.
Yeah.
I heard. I went back and I looked at watched the show just a little bit just to see your guys' faces again. And I heard you got some cuts in at Glendevere.
I did. And you
good
know,
for you.
We were supposed to go again yesterday, but you know, it's kind of scheduling. So we might get on the links today. You know, it's going to become a regular thing.
Like,
I think I'm going to be a golfer.
You're going to be better than me in no time.
I mean, shoot, man, it's right around the corner. I'm about to go get those Jordan golf shoes.
Ooh, I got some Olympic sixes myself.
Do you really?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I saw that they had some.
It's clean.
I'm currently wearing the Jordan 12s, and I saw they have some of those the golf shoe. I'm like, oh, that's the one I want.
My buddy's got a pair of those. So, last week was going down. The week before, week two, I felt like there was something else happening. And then yesterday, as 4:30 comes around, which was two of the biggest games in college football. You had Bama, Georgia, and then you had Penn State, Illinois, two undefeated Big Ten teams. 4:30, that is also my son's soccer game kickoff. So sorry, son.
Is that why no one was watching the pregame show on YouTube? Because not only was everybody watching Alabama v. Georgia, but they were also at their kids' sporting events at 4:30 on a Saturday.
Yeah, possibly.
I mean, you're talking soccer, you're talking Pop football. Warner football.
That's
you're talking
peak time.
AAU basketball.
Oh, you know, I was locked
lot,
in on
a lot going on Saturdays now.
I was locked in on the Newberg Grant 7th, 8th grade football game on the field adjacent to us. Yeah. I mean, it was nonstop action in Newberg yesterday. So there was that.
Generals.
And then today, at 12:30, my son has another soccer game. And I said to him last night, I was like, your game is right in the middle, or basically right at the start of the witching hour, dude. When wins become wins and losses become losses. Yeah. Like, who is doing the scheduling for your team?
It's somebody clearly not a football fan.
Well, I was very proud of my son last night, though, because, again, I was with him, the lady, last night. And I said to him, I was like, dude, your game starts tomorrow right when the witching hour starts. My girlfriend's like, the witching hour? And my son just jumps in perfectly. He's like, when wins become wins and losses become losses. I was like,
yeah, it's my boy.
That's my boy.
Never been so proud, right?
Yeah, exactly. I love you. Exactly. All right. Well, let's get going. We have so much football to talk about. Again, we haven't been together, all three of us, since week one.
Yeah, this is like our own witching hour.
Yes, exactly. We're going to get a win. This will turn into a win of a broadcast.
I believe so. I think we're already winning.
You can text into the show, 503-864-6326. I had to remember what the number was for a second. I was like, wait, it's been so long. Vancouver Ford text line. We're going to jump right into this Ducks game, but we're going to get into looking at the top 25. There was a bit of a shakeup. Just recap all the games. We're going to look at the NFL season so far. What are some of the biggest surprises to all of us to start this NFL season? And we're also going to do some previewing. I think week one I said, on these 9 a.m. starts, we're going to go into NFL first, so that way we can have the first hour to preview the 10 a.m. and just get going in NFL and then go Ducks, Beavers, college football in the second hour. But because of this 8 a.m. start, I feel like it's only appropriate to just start with the college football,
I think we got time.
Oregon Ducks. Yeah, and then at the 9 a.m., we'll go into the NFL and start.
Today we got time, cuz.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Plus,
yeah,
there's like no Beaver game to talk about. Bye week for them. Yeah. So, yeah. Weird one.
Beavers got the week off as well. So, we will get right into this Oregon Ducks victory against the UCLA Bruins last night down in LA. Football Sunday. Joe Fisher, Rashad Taylor, Jordan Schultz on the ones and twos. This is Football Sunday on 1080 The Fan. So, the Oregon Ducks. Did you know, I have a fun fact for you about their win last night. They are now the most winningest program in Big Ten history. They have a perfect winning percentage in the Big Ten. No other team can say, well, USC can say that as well. But the Ducks are undefeated in Big Ten play in their history. And of course, it's only right that they kick off their Big Ten new Big Ten home, playing Big Ten stalwart
juggernaut
UCLA, right? I will say that seeing some of these matchups to start the year in conference play, it has been just throwing me off. Where, like, I think it was last week, Stanford and Syracuse played, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of a weird matchup. I'm like, oh, that's a conference game. Last night, Stanford versus Clemson. Oh, that's a conference game. Like, some of these matchups, seeing them on paper. Was it Utah-Arizona last night?
Yeah.
Conference game.
Conference game,
baby.
In a different conference. So, I mean, it is, now that it's actually happening, it definitely is a weird one. I think, was it next week, College Game Day is going to Berkeley, I believe, for Miami at Cal, which is a conference game. I'd have to check if it's either at Berkeley or they're going to Coral Gables. But yeah, Miami-Cal, conference game. So, well, last night is a conference game. It is not a Pac-12 conference game. Ducks versus UCLA, but the Ducks, besides one little snafu at the end of the first half, where if Tez Johnson just keeps his footing, then the final score and the first half go much, much different. But the Ducks with a very impressive dominating victory over the UCLA Bruins.
It wasn't close to start. Actually, it was only close to start. So, I mean, like, Ducks get an early touch, not early touchdown, but
hey, guys, it was tied at one point.
Yeah, Ducks get an early touchdown.
0-0 when we kicked off.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, that's they look kind of slow for the rest of the quarter. And then second quarter, they find their mojo and they pick it up. And that's really where the game was over. You know, by the time they got the second. And these are the kind of victories I think Duck fans want to see. Right? You don't, I mean, may start a little slow, but you have a burst in the second quarter just before halftime, and you go into the half feeling confident. You know, there are some of these games so far this season to where they may have been up going to the half, but, like, you just don't feel good about where this team is. And for being real, this was kind of a – we can call this a bit of a – I mean, they've already had one. I guess we can call the Oregon State game the same thing, but kind of a tune-up game for them. You know, if they have a big game this week, and then obviously they go into the Friday night game and you're feeling good about that, like – I think now all of a sudden we're seeing a team, at least for me, I'm looking specifically at the offensive line or offensive line and the defensive line. I'm not so much concerned with your skill positions. I'm not so concerned with Dylan Gabriel and how he's going to perform. His ball, when he throws, it looks a little weird at times, you know, but he makes it happen, and he's, you know, he's pretty accurate. So I have to give it to him in that regard. You have a stud group of receivers. Running backs. I'm not concerned about the offense outside of the offensive line. And yesterday they did their thing. And so if they can continue to grow and play the way they've been playing, the Ducks are a formidable, formidable team in this new Big 10 or Big 18 or whatever we're calling it now.
Yeah. Again, it was a very weird like second half because it definitely got the vibes of like, dude, let's just get the F out of here. Like we're clearly going to win this game. So let's just run the ball, run the clock, get this over with, get the hell out of here, and get back home with a W. But that first half, it was just clean. It was the offense was on point. The defense, Jordan mentioned this basically in the first segment. The only touchdown that was given up to UCLA was that pick six. They held the UCLA offense to just 6 points in the last night's game. The defensive line. And Bryce Betcher, I mean, he has just been amazing since week one. The secondary really didn't get tested at all last night. Mm-hmm. And the D-line made sure of that. I mean, this is probably, I would say, their best win of the season. The Oregon State game was great, but they definitely turned it on a little bit later to separate themselves. So, yeah, I mean, the third quarter, fourth quarter, a little weird, a little clunky, just because, again, I think it was more so like, let's just get the hell out of here. Yeah, all right.
No
let's
mistakes
just,
at the end of the game.
One thing that, and I want to say that it was Jeff Schwartz, he tweeted this out. This is 11 drives taking out kneel downs, end of game, end of first half. 11 drives since the new offensive line started the Beaver game. Touchdown, 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 field goal. Touchdown, 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 field goal, touchdown, touchdown.
Yeah,
that is the Oregon offense since they readjusted their offensive line, put Poncho at center, moved some things around, and it's been a completely different team as far as the offensive side of the ball over the last two games.
Well, and to start the game, it looked like Oregon kind of had scripted out more of a dink and dunk style, kind of saying, hey, you know what, this is what we know we can get from UCLA, we're just going to chunk it down the field. They put together a beautiful, five-and-a-half-minute drive, I think, and you kind of thought that, all right, Oregon set the tone for the whole game from there, but I think there was a little bit of a herky-jerky feel at the end of the first half going into the second half, too, for Oregon. I felt like, I don't think they should have scored 70, but I felt like they should have scored more points even beyond that interception for a pick six at the end of the first half by Dylan Gabriel. So, like, I liked Oregon's performance, but at the same time, this kind of now, after the final score is read, it's like, is this more of like a prove it game again? Because they ran over Oregon State. They beat the hell out of them. And a lot of people expected them to do the same to UCLA, and they just didn't. And really quickly, shame on UCLA. Shame on Deshaun Foster for punting it with 7 minutes to go, down three scores. Go for it on fourth down, you wussies. I can't stand it when you're down by so much in football and then you punt the ball away. You're conceding the loss. Try.
I mean, attempt. Well, when you're down three touchdowns.
8 minutes to go.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those things. And I feel you and what you were saying, and it feels like in the second half, they went more conservative. Obviously, like Joe was kind of saying, man, let's just get out of here with the W. And that's kind of the offense we had been used to seeing from this Ducks team most of the year so far. It's just a really conservative, don't make any mistakes. Let's just try to run. Let's just try to get out of the sticky situation. And I think that's what they did, which in my book was kind of smart. And I don't know. I mean, maybe it's the – you know, it's the memories that we have of the old Ducks team and really running up the score and scoring, you know, 60-something, 70-something points a game. But you lose by three touchdowns. That's a pretty significant win. You know, that's a significant loss, you know, depending on which side of the ball you're on. And pretty much UCLA got their ass kicked at the very beginning of the game. They couldn't produce any offense in the second half of the game, and they lost by 21 points. Like, they got their ass kicked. And so, no, it wasn't 56 points. And, you know, the points that we're used to seeing, the Mariota-led, you know, Ducks, or even the Vernon Adams-led Ducks, you know, taking this team to, like, these crazy point totals. But at this point, I just want to see Oregon dominate games. And the first half was pretty dominant. Like, mind you, the one mistake made by Dylan Gabriel gave up a pick six. But outside of that, you know, they don't give that up. UCLA scored 6 points in this game.
Yeah, I mean, what I want to see, and we've seen it the last couple of games and going forward, is just offensive and defensive dominating the line of scrimmage. Being the better team at the point of attack, right there on offense and defense. And defense, the defensive line has been showing that the last couple of weeks. I mean, I am just getting more and more impressed by that specific unit as the weeks go by. I mean, Derek Harmon, Jordan Birch, like those two alone, they're absolute studs. So as long as defensive line is going to create a lot of problems for teams, and it's going to help out the rest of the defense. Coverage sacks.
Absolutely.
Where quarterbacks are running around, trying to make a play happen, make a bad play, make a bad throw, gets tipped, ends up in a DB's hands. Bryce Betcher ends up with a pick like he does last night. Again, just can't mention him enough just because of how great he has been this season for the Ducks. But the offensive line, I mean, as we start getting into the rest of this Big Ten schedule and start playing better teams, that's where it's going to have to show out. I mean, Michigan State, we'll see with next week. It's a little bit better of a team than UCLA. But again, don't want to look at, and this is the tough part, is I feel like the Ducks, Duck fans, not so much the team, but this area has just been licking their chops and waiting for that October 12th game. And is just waiting for that matchup. And now that we're almost there, is that they can't look past Friday night.
No,
you're going to have Jonathan Smith coming in, who has a win against the Ducks on his record. And again, this Michigan State team, a lot to be desired. They're in the middle to lower pack of the
Those
Big Ten.
Those are the
10.
Ones that get you.
But on a Friday night at Autzen, you're back at home. Michigan State's got to travel on the short week. You should be able to handle business. It should be another tune-up game. You should be able to win this by three touchdowns at least again before you end up welcoming in Ohio State for one of, if not the biggest games at Autzen in its history.
But Michigan State has played spoiler to Oregon in Autzen before.
I'd have to say,
haven't they?
Oregon beat Michigan State at Oregon. I remember that. I remember they had the back-to-back series like almost about 10 years ago. I hear Jordan tapping away.
Oh,
on
I'm
keyboard.
Trying to get there.
Yeah, Michigan State, I remember the series that they had in 2013, 2014, yeah. Because I was down at U of O, and I wanted to get tickets to that Michigan State game at Oregon, and I was pissed because I was at a wedding, and I couldn't get...
They better still be
couldn't
better.
Get to the student login in time to get a ticket. But Oregon, I remember because as far as a late interception goes, they were wearing the all yellow tops, yellow bottoms, black helmet, and they ended up sealing that win late. The next year, though, at Michigan State,
that is when Rashad is talking about Oregon did lose to Michigan
State. Okay, it was at Michigan State.
31-28. Vernon Adams was the quarterback for Oregon. He threw two interceptions that day. And I'm trying to see. Yeah, Royce Freeman ran for a tutty, but let's see.
Was that the Connor Cook Michigan State team?
That was the Connor Cook Michigan State team.
I heard that name in a stretch.
Yeah. yeah, Oregon had a chance at the end to either tie it or take the lead because they were down by 10 and then scored a touchdown with about 3 minutes to go. Forced a punt by Michigan State, got the ball back with about a minute, and they turned it over on downs without an opportunity to score, even though they had one. So, sucks. They couldn't get it done.
Yeah, but this will be the first time Michigan State is back at Autzen since that game that they won. I want to say, yeah, that was the 2013 season, I believe. 2013 or 2014.
Yeah, 2014. It was a home and away whatever back-to-back year, yeah.
So Jonathan Smith wearing green, coming back to Oregon, playing the Ducks one more time. Aiden Childs playing the Ducks one more time, starting quarterback for Michigan State, former Oregon State Beaver. I haven't seen a line for this game yet. I'm going to actually jump on old Vegas Insider real quick
to see if I can get something
pulled up. Because, yeah, I haven't seen... I mean, my guess is that Oregon probably opens this game as like a 20.5 point favorite, is my guess.
Even after that, like, I mean, they were 24 over UCLA, did not cover that spread. I wonder if Vegas is going to shrink their spreads a little bit. A little shrinkage going on down in Eugene.
Boy, I am... I mean, I don't know if this gets bet down, but it is opening at 26.5.
That's too much.
Oregon, a 26.5 point favorite against Michigan State.
I just lost so much cash on Oregon covering the spread last night, and yet they still turn around 6 days later to say, oh, yeah, they're going to win by 26.5.
And the under hit last night in last night's game as well. Over-under numbers set at 52.5 in the Oregon-Michigan State game. So there's your betting angles to start the week. But I mean, it's already starting to get bet down. It opened at 26.5 and now on like DraftKings, FanDuel, down to 25.5. So, people starting to lay the money on Michigan State to cover there.
Get into the cover money now because yeah, I would assume that's going to be another 3 or 4 points down by the time we get to game time on Friday.
Let's take a look at the rest of the college landscape, especially the top 10. We had some teams go down, but as we start getting into the thick of the college football season, some teams start to separate themselves. And I want to ask you guys as well, what were you doing at 17 years old? Because I'm sure it was not nearly as cool as a certain player down in the South and what he's doing. We get to that next here on Football Sunday, but first, Jordan Schultz with SportsCenter Update. Hour number two, we'll get into the NFL action, previewing what is to come this NFL Sunday. Also, going over each of our biggest surprises and biggest disappointments of this early NFL season. Feel like we could do that.
Ginger!
And also... Papa's trying to win some brand new shoes, okay? I am on the app. I am trying to find some money opportunities, and we will do that in the second hour with Who Do You Love? There's a lot of interesting lines out there, and I'm trying to figure out what the hell I want to win and more likely lose money on. So we'll do that in hour number two. But let's go through the top 10 here in the college football landscape because there were a couple teams that took L's. A couple of other teams that almost took L's. And I was saying earlier in the week to my buddy, I'm like, man, it kind of seems like the top 10, there's this group, this tier that is just separating themselves and showing that they are the upper echelon of college football. And three of those teams, well, two of them took a loss. One of them almost did. The one that almost took a loss was on Friday night, Miami barely escaping Virginia Tech. And that game was wild because Miami looked like they had the early momentum and they were about to run away with that thing 14-7 in the first quarter. And we all know that games are decided in the first quarter and there's no point to play the rest of the game, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, tale's old as time, right? First quarter, whatever, just call it. We're done here. And then Virginia Tech came back. Cam Ward, three turnovers, but still doing Cam Ward-like things in that game. The little get rid of the ball, like shovel pass, push pass that he had to get rid of to his running back. I believe that was actually to Cam McCormick he had to get that to. The 15-year veteran.
39-year-old Cam McCormick.
Oh, my God.
Not 29.
Bobby Boucher out there, 32-year-old freshman.
It's still time for you guys, man.
Right, yeah.
I'm a little older. I'm a little past it, but you guys?
Well, there's a guy, receiver at Arkansas, that I want to say is like 29, and he's a freshman. Because he went and played baseball at a high school.
You shouldn't be allowed to do that. Yeah, man, you are physically different. No.
Paul Blake, man, from Necessary Roughness. Yes, absolutely.
Well, there was like a 54-year-old dude playing on some team like in like the community college ranks a few years ago. Why not let that happen? Come on, let's let Alabama sign one of their coaches, throw him in there, a linebacker.
Go ahead, man. It's called maturity in the locker room. Some of these young teams need it.
Monte Harrison is his name, 29 years old, playing for the Razorbacks. But Miami, that was one of the teams early on in this season where I was just like, even in that Virginia Tech game, I was like, man, I can't wait until they play like actual competition because they are just rolling teams. And then Virginia Tech was like, not so fast, my friend. We're gonna play you guys pretty hard and almost get the win, but Miami ends up pulling it out late on Friday night. I was watching that game and also staying up to date on it over at Con because Con, shocker, does not have any TVs to watch NFL, unfortunately. Food was great. But would have been nice if I could get a big screen in there.
Yeah, you know? Just a little bit. Thank God for having apps on your phones and being able to pull up. I know you have YouTube TV, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And I have, you know, I think I have every app on my phone, you know, that I
give me the quad screen, so baby.
We're good.
Texas, they rolled Mississippi State. A little bit of a slow start for them in that. And then they end up pulling away in the second half. But really the banger of the day, which the fact that it even turned into this close of a game was amazing. The Georgia-Alabama, what an absolute classic.
Oh, yeah. Georgia
28-0 Alabama was up in that
Georgia one. Georgia was dead in the water at first. And it was like, okay, this game is clearly over.
28-0, 30-7 at halftime because Alabama also gets a safety. Like, whenever a team gets a safety at that point in the game with that score, you're just like, okay, this is over. we're done here. And then Georgia, I mean, all props to them. Kudos to them for coming back in that game because that's a spot where a lot of teams just roll over and die. And then they do not even put up a fighting chance. And they even had the lead late in that game. And then this is where I was wanting to ask or go in the segment before where, what were you guys doing at 17 years old? I was just trying to get a catch in the Sherwood Bowman wing tee offense. That was my goal. I just want a catch, please.
Yeah, like backing up center on the offensive line at my high school or backup catcher. Like, no, I was not an athletic like stud at 17. I was on my way out.
Rashad, no 75-yard touchdown receptions over at Western Oregon?
No 75-yard touchdowns anywhere, even in high school. So, you know, it's just kind of one of those things. It's very, very much what's called a utility guy, you know. Oh, hey, man, you need me to play tight end for
Taylor?
Second? Yeah.
Get in there, D-line.
Yeah, get in there and hike the ball.
You got it, coach.
Yeah, I got you. Whatever we need.
You know, it does make me feel good that, like, the one guy that got a pick six once at my high school is still probably talking about it to this day.
Oh, man. And that's, I'm still like talking about my pick six freshman year. Read that screen pass perfectly. That's what we're watching film gives you, baby.
Sometimes you got to talk about the good plays, you know. It's one of those things.
Like, Liberty, I mean, don't know what hit him.
Absolutely, man. These Cardinals have no idea what they're about to get.
Wait,
today.
Freshman, like, them. On varsity or freshman on freshman football?
Oh, freshman football.
Oh, come
freshman
on! Yeah.
What I love about, like, eighth grade freshman football is that there was always a team, like, you would watch film, and every team seemingly had, like, one formation they only used for, like, one play, and they thought it was like, oh, yeah, no one's going to be able to sniff this out. Then they'd run it in the game, and you're like, okay, they're clearly
trick,
running.
Trick.
Yeah, exactly. They're clearly running this play, and so you could just call it out and, yeah, exactly, snuff out exactly what's happening.
What's worse is when you can't stop it. They line up like that. It's like, oh,
yeah, that
here
is
comes
worse.
That sweep. And then you just cannot catch the running back on the outside, and it's a wrap.
Now, this play, it was against Liberty. They ran this stupid screen play where they had three wide receivers where it was literally they were just in a line.
Oh,
like, one at the line of scrimmage, one dude behind him, and then a third receiver behind him. And that was the only play that they ran out of it was a screen pass. So I saw it as a corner. I'm like, oh, boy, I wonder what they're going to do here. I think it's going to be a really complicated route tree that they're running out of it. And, you know, Joe Fish, he jumped the route and he took it to the house.
Look at you. Look at you. You got that on tape?
Glory days, yeah. Baby.
Smarter than me, dude. I couldn't
recognize the play. Boys of fall, bitch.
You got that on tape?
Yeah.
Somewhere.
We didn't see that.
It's probably, they probably got rid of it off the hard drive. I don't know if they need that film anymore.
I've told you all about my quarterback prowess, right?
Oh, really?
I literally tripped trying to hand the ball off to the running back in the one play that I've ever played quarterback.
Brucey from longest yard.
It was his fault, not mine, but
you
I was still the one
that popcorn?
Looked like an idiot. He ran the wrong effing direction.
Anyways, we are not 17-year-olds like Ryan Williams for Alabama.
No, we are
who
not.
Is, I mean, I don't know if he is the best receiver in college football, but damn, he's got to be like top five or something because it just seems like every game he has a huge touchdown. And then that last one for him to score the go-ahead touchdown with 2 minutes left. I mean, Chris Berman somewhere was at home watching that just, what? because he hit it. It was like the slowest, most effective spin move I have seen along the sideline, but just gave him enough. Like, I think even the Georgia defender was like halted for a second and was like, what the hell is it? Oh, God.
What do I do?
Yeah. He just did. Oh, God. He's gone. Yeah, unreal what we're seeing from Ryan Williams in Alabama. And tip of the cap, I don't want to give him credit because he beat Oregon multiple times during his tenure at Washington. But Kalen DeBoer, he's got Alabama undefeated, 4-0. Let a naysayer know, Jalen Milroe, now your leader in the Heisman odds.
Should he not be, you know, at this point, like considering the season he's having, considering what they've been able to do out there in Tuscaloosa, like I don't think any of us saw this happening this year. I mean, I think we all thought it would be a little bit of a slow start, right? New coach, you know, you lose a guy like Nick Saban, like how do you respond, you know, to that? And so far, you respond by getting arguably the best receiver in college who, oh, by the way, he can't even vote yet or buy a pack of Swishers or cigarettes or anything yet because he's only 17. And he's in college right now for what probably will be the number one team in the country, you know.
Do you think this puts Alabama, that they leapfrog Texas after this?
I think that it's still Alabama, unfortunately. And because it's Alabama and because you had the game you had against who you had it against, if they didn't play Georgia, it'd be different. I think if they had played any other team that wasn't Georgia or Ohio State or whatever, then it would be different. But the fact that they beat up on Georgia for most of the game until they came back at the end, like, hey, man, like, I think they're going to go number one.
No, considering Jalen Milroe was near perfect, if not perfect, in like the first and second quarter. I think he started 7 of 7, 100 yards and a tutty, 40 yards rushing and a tutty. I mean, dude was like a video game stat to start the game and ended up with video game stats. Yeah, Heisman Trophy leader, that's for sure at this point.
Yeah, my prediction is Alabama ends the season before the playoff, either 1 or 2.
I think they're going to jump up to 2. I think they'll still keep Texas at number 1. You know, that game against Michigan in Ann Arbor, I think, still speaks a lot about how good that team really is.
But Alex, Orji wasn't their quarterback. They literally had to move on to Alex Orji because that guy, whoever he was, isn't a quarterback either. You're telling me that Texas beating Michigan means more to people than Alabama beating Georgia? I think that's crazy.
Well, I think that also, you know, Alex Orji at quarterback for Michigan doesn't mean a whole lot because he can't throw for more than like 80 yards a game.
Exactly.
So, I mean, he can run the ball, yeah, but like the passing attack for Michigan isn't much better than it was against Texas. And again, that was just a dominating victory against Michigan. It was like, there is clearly a separation in talent. Texas, again, they started slow against Mississippi State yesterday. Would I be surprised if they put Alabama at number one? Not at all. But I just still think that Texas is undefeated. They're 5-0. How they've looked to start the year, they've been dominant.
And they got the young boy that we've been talking about for years since he was a sophomore. And he's performing out there in Arch Manning. So
the Black Manning, the way that he can run.
Oh, did you see his little touchdown celebration he had? Or it was like, oh, go ahead, Arch.
My God. And then also in this top 10, Ohio State, they beat Michigan State. Penn State and Illinois, that was a top 25 matchup. Illinois trying to be undefeated to start this year. They're driving to try and tie the game. And then Altmaier throws a late pick six to where Penn State is able to separate themselves 21-7. But our two top 10 losses, Utah, what the hell, man?
Man.
The brother of Zach Wilson, not able to get it done. I believe it's Isaac Wilson. Isaac Wilson, freshman quarterback. Oh, my God, he looks so much like Zach Wilson. It's creepy.
Wait, so Cam Rising's not there anymore?
He's not playing still.
What, because of that injury?
Yeah, he's still not playing.
I have not checked in on Utah football. Hold on, Utah's been ranked 10 without Cam Rising.
Yes.
Because I heard all this summer that, oh, Cam Rising coming back, Utah, a new weaker conference that they're in, they're going to succeed. You've got to be kidding me.
Pretty impressive win for Arizona to go into Utah at night. I mean, winning that game in Utah, a nighttime game, is never easy. And sure enough, Arizona does it. They start the Big 12 1-0, 23-10. But the biggest loss of the top 10 is Kentucky beating Ole Miss.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, literally weeks ago, Kentucky lost to South Carolina 31-6. People in Kentucky were calling it the worst loss of the Mark Stoops era. And then a week later, they almost beat Georgia. And then a couple weeks later after that, They now take down Ole Miss 20-17, and that is your first real big top 10 matchup of the year. I'm not counting Florida State losing to be Georgia Tech because Florida State is absolute dog water.
Did you see what happened to them yesterday?
Just getting boat raced by SMU.
New conference opponent, and they are way better than you already, apparently.
Dear God.
What happened to Florida State?
They were number 10 to start the season.
I remember Florida State, you know, growing up, Florida State was one of those schools that were like, it's one of those you know, traditional powerhouses. And now it's like, ever since Taggart took over, they've never recovered.
Well, and also they gave themselves a little bit of false hope with Mike Norvell. A couple of years ago, they had that 10-3 season. And listen, last year, Jordan Travis, they were able to have that undefeated year. But then they had an exodus of talent. A few guys went into the NFL and or transferred. And, I mean, their offense with DJU is anemic. I mean, absolutely disgusting. My buddy earlier in the week, he was on the Florida State team total under 20.5, and that hit 14 points they scored yesterday. So I want to keep this going, though. We're up against the clock. I want to keep this top 25 conversation going because I want to get into this Ole Miss game a little bit because there was a decision late in the game from Lane Kiffin that I was just not a fan of. And then we'll take a look at the rest of the college football landscape because there's a few teams that are undefeated that we have never seen in our lifetime at this moment in time. And I want to get that. Get to that because there is I know who you're happy about. Yeah. Cash in the ticket now, baby.
Just saying.
We get to that next year. More college football on Football Sunday on 1080 The Fan. So the biggest top 10 loss of the day yesterday goes to Lane Kiffin and Ole Miss. And boy, did they Ole Miss the field goal at the end of the game. Saw that tweet a billion times yesterday. But Kentucky, they end up pulling out the win. But there was a decision at the end of the game from Ole Miss that just drove me crazy. And as it was happening, I was like, I'm not a fan of this. I don't know if I like this. So Ole Miss is driving to just tie the game to send it to overtime, right? Final score is 20-17. They have the ball. They're trying to get a tie in this one. I'd have to go back and look at their timeout situation, how many they had. But earlier in the drive, they have a 4th-and-11 that they convert a long completion for, 42 yards. They completed it to get down to the Kentucky 34-yard line. And again, I see that they took a timeout earlier in the possession, but I don't know if it was their last one, if they still had one available. But then they get to a 4th-and-7. So after that big completion, you know, incompletion, also Jackson Dart, he took a sack at the 38-yard line, like that late in the game. At that point, I was like, literally after he makes an amazing pass, huge completion to convert the fourth down and get to Kentucky territory. It was like, what's the one thing you can't do? You're now basically in field goal territory. It's like, don't take a sack. He takes a sack. Ends up getting bailed out by a defensive offsides later in the possession. So now Kentucky is at the 31-yard line after a short completion. 31-yard line, 48 seconds left to go. All right. 31-yard line, 48 seconds left to go. You're on the right hash. You got a college kicker. So you're looking at a 48-yard field goal with 48 seconds left. In my mind, watching that go down, and the commentators are asking, is like, all right, they're going to keep the offense out there and go for it on 4th-and-7, or are they going to kick the field goal? Ole Miss, they run out the field goal team, and they kick the field goal. And I hated the decision. It's like, if you're an offensive player and you have just made this drive and converted to get down to this point in the game and you still have 48 seconds left on the clock.
Yeah, I'm not going for it right now.
Go for it. Go for the fourth down. Try and convert. Put the ball in Jackson Dart's hand and your offensive player's hands. The guys that mean the most, your playmakers, the guys that are working this entire game. To go for a field goal with that much time left on the clock, 48 yards, college kicker, right hash. Like, all of it was just lined up. I was like, I do not like this decision at all. And then sure enough, you know, it's hindsight's 20/20. He misses. And I'm like, dude, see, that's why you don't do that. But I just thought that situation, it's not like they had 10 seconds left in the game, 5 seconds. Like, you just completed a 4th-and-11 earlier in this drive as well. Jackson Dart is not a bad quarterback. Ole Miss, you have a good offense. I know it hasn't been clicking today exactly, and Kentucky's been playing well, but I would rather be able to sleep at night being like, you know, we went for it. We tried to put our team in a better position to either, I don't know, win the game. You have time to still maybe score a touchdown and take the lead. Or even just give our kicker an easier opportunity than a 48-yard field goal to tie the game. Again, I was just not happy with that decision from Lane Kiffin at all. And, you know, there's a lot of decisions that go into the game for winning and losing, but in that moment, I was not particularly happy. And I was like, man, if I'm an offensive player for Ole Miss, I'm pissed at that decision.
It's tough. Like
it's a tough decision, but to me, I was just in the moment. I was like, I don't like that.
You gotta have Dan Campbell size balls to be able to go for it on fourth down in that you know situation, and obviously Lane Kiffin kind of doesn't, you know. But I think it's important for us to not really poo poo so much on Kentucky, because mind you, I don't know if we remember, but just I think it was 3 weeks ago, Kentucky held Georgia to 13 points.
Yeah.
The entire game. They lost that game by 1 point. The score was 13-12, and we just sat and talked about how impressive Georgia was in a near comeback win against Alabama, right? You know, so we know what Georgia offensively, defensively is able to do, and this Kentucky team held them to 13 points for the game. So it doesn't super shock me that they were able to go out and play really, really well and respond quarter after quarter against this Rebels team. Like, it doesn't really shock me. You know, if you look at the just kind of the scoring drive overall, you know, you're down in the first quarter, you take the lead in the second, you're back down in the third, you take the lead back in the fourth. Like, that entire game was just continuous responses from this offense, and they were able to put points on the board. And I think Lane Kiffin had an opportunity to, like you said, 40 some odd seconds left, man, you can make another play and see what's happening. But it goes to show, like, how much faith do you really have in your quarterback? How much faith do you have in your skill position players to be able to go out there and make a play in that position? It just kind of shows that I don't know if he really had that same type of confidence in his team that, you know, fill in the name of the coach here would have, you know, going into that situation. Because I don't know, with 40 seconds left, I think, you know, and you said it was a fourth and long.
Fourth and seven.
I have to go. You don't have a choice. Like, I mean, we're going to lose anyway. Like, if we don't go for it, if we miss it, we lose. If we go for it, there's a good chance that we convert. There's a great chance that we don't, but I think you have to try. So I think I at least go out there and lay it down. And it kills me, too.
It's like, all right, okay, clearly you have confidence in your kicker to make the game, but you also mentioned it. It's like, Do you not have the confidence in your offensive players? And it's like, who do you want to hang your hat on? Like, we went out there with our offense trying to convert the fourth and seven. And, you know, 48, he should be making that. He should make that. If you are a college kicker for a top 10 team, you should be making that, yes. But also, it's a college kicker. He's trying to tie the game late in the game from 48 yards out on the right hash. Like, and he sure enough pulls it left. Like, that situation to me is just not ideal, where sending him out, I have the utmost confidence. I have more confidence in my offense to be able to convert a fourth and seven versus being able to make that field goal. And then you live and die by the you have to live with the decision regardless, but I can sleep at night knowing my players that I have that depend on us the most to win and be successful is our offensive players.
And I think in this situation,
not our kicker. Like, it's not like week after week I'm going in, I'm like, hey, at least we got our kicker.
I think in this situation, it's. I mean, I don't know how much Lane was thinking about this, but it's also maybe protecting his team. You know, a missed 48-yard field goal, like, that's relatively common, yeah? Like, I mean, 48 yards is
especially in college,
far, you know? So at least in that regard, I can, you know, I can take it on the chin. This was on me, guys, you know. But if you send your quarterback out there fourth and seven, they don't compete right there. It's like, you know, that's a blame that's going to go on the quarterback or go on the offensive line or whoever. If you're a Lane Kiffin, you take this one on the chin. It was like this one was on me for this loss. So I don't know. It's a kind of a 50-50 type thing. So maybe they don't convert at all. Maybe they do. Maybe they, you know, make the field goal. Maybe they don't. In this case, they didn't. So it's a tough call to make if you're a coach. It just really depends on how gutsy you are in that situation.
All right. Wrapped up our college football action. To preview next week, again, Oregon taking on Michigan State, and we get a future Pac-12 matchup between Oregon State and Colorado State tomorrow, which don't count out the Colorado State Rams, because we just had a future Pac-12 matchup last night between Boise State and Washington State, and Boise State just whooped on the Cougs last night. I think it was, what, 45-21 final score? Ashton Gentry, my God. Absolute animal at running back.
Dude, it's not fair.
Dude is a stud.
It's not fair.
Can Washington State tackle? Apparently they can't.
No.
At least in the second half last night they could not. Because, like, I get that their running back's really good. Janty probably should be in the Heisman conversation, but I thought Washington State could actually tackle.
Yeah, it's rough. I can't wait to see Patrick Harris on Tuesday and see how he's feeling now after the last couple of weeks. I even said to him last week, I was like, speaking very confidently for a team that barely just got by San Jose State on Friday night, 54-52, but I digress. Get ready for some more college football. Beavs back in action tomorrow, Friday night football game for the Ducks, and other top 25 matchups, and hopefully some upsets to come. All right, hour number two coming out. We get into NFL action. Want to obviously preview some of the games, but I think I want to start biggest surprises, biggest disappointments as we are 3 weeks into the NFL season and just an hour away until 10 a.m. kickoff right here on Football Sunday on 1080 The Fan.